Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is the perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. In this life there's no surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through.
To the folks who are listening to this on the archives. And I'd like to start off, of course, after thanking everyone, is to direct you to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, in which you can find the link there through Blog Talk Radio from this show's homepage. And once you are there to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, I'd like you to check out the Get Involved page, where you can see a red button that says Save an Elephant. And for a great Christmas gift, you can sponsor a baby elephant from the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust, in which for only $50 a year, you can sponsor one of these baby elephants whose parents were killed by poachers over there in Africa. Of course, they're being poached for their ivory and their tusks, which is used by many, or is being bought by many of Chinese over there. It's become a, you know, a interest of sorts for them, and a show of status for many of the Chinese. And also it's horrible because a lot of the money is going to fund weapons over there that are, of course, being used in some of these tribal and brush wars that are being over in Africa. And of course, you've probably heard as well that, you know, a lot of children are being killed by that. So it's a great cause. It's, you know, a good amount, you know, good amount of money. It's not that expensive to do it. And so please check that out on the Bard's Logic Political Talk website. And also check out more of what the Sheldrick Wildlife Trust does. Now, tonight we're going to have a number of special guests on, one of which is going to be Donald Sheldon, who filed a complaint to the federal grand jury regarding Obama's called killed list. And what we have here is the policy has caused, as we talk about tonight, three American citizens or death, caused three deaths of three American citizens by drones. And Mr. Well, I got that all tongue-tied, did I not? Anyway, Mr. Sheldon's complaint addresses the same, and it was intended for a federal grand jury, as I said, but it's been blocked by the Justice Department. And we also will have Kelly Mordecai on, who has authored the book, The Hidden Fourth Branch, which talks about the federal grand jury. And he will also be joining us. And speaking of Kelly, I believe I have him on the line. So I got a little tongue-tied there, Kelly, but I'm back here. Glad to have you on the line. How are you?
Hey, Robert. Good to be on your show again. Yeah, about this kill list complaint, Justice Department blocks it kind of thing. Well, I got a funny to start out with. I'm just looking at my Facebook likes, all that stuff, and it says here, Barry Satoro likes your link on his own timeline. Kill list radio discussion and complaint. Barry Satoro. Yeah, well, actually, I chatted with a guy months ago, Barry Satoro. He's obviously not Barry Satoro, a.k.a. Barack Hussein Obama. But Barry just posted the name up just for gags, and, you know, it's an individual. But, hey, what do you know? Barry Satoro likes that he's going to have his kill list investigated.
Interesting. And I believe at this time we do have Mr. Sheldon in on the line. So I'm going to open up, I believe, which is his mic. Is this Mr. Sheldon?
Thank you. I'm here.
Great. Thank you very much for coming to the show. I really appreciate it. We'll have a great discussion tonight, I am sure. And in some measures, you know, I've talked to some people tonight who'd like to hear more about it, and also, you know, what it entails and what it could mean for either for liberty or the safety of American citizens. And so what I'll do at this point is leave the floor back to you, Kelly, and then we'll move on with the discussion with Mr. Sheldon. Go ahead, Kelly.
Well, okay. Well, yeah, I also invited Roger Roots. He's an attorney that's helped us with this complaint. So if Roger's there, that'd be great. He might have some other obligations. But, yeah, so we're going to talk about this. The what?
Understood.
Yeah. Yeah, so hopefully Roger can join us. Yeah, so we're going to basically talk a little bit about this, the kill list, what it is. Donald got busy, filed a complaint with the grand jury. And then we got a response from the Department of Justice. Well, we're going to take it a little bit further Mr. Sullivan wants to sue and the Department of Justice. I know that's a pretty big swallow right there. That's what his next step is. But before we go a little further, we want to. I just wanted to communicate about Watergate, because some people are thinking, well, you know, are you guys out there? Well, Watergate. Look at Watergate. The Watergate investigation occurred, and most of you know it. Somebody bugged the hotel, and then it opened up a bigger investigation, and pretty soon the grand jury was investigating that whole scenario. There was several grand juries on this, and it even went up to chain of command, Eichmann. Donald can tell us a little bit about the Attorney Justice Mitchell. He wasn't really willing to take much of a fall for Nixon, but ultimately the grand jury indicted several of the Watergate boys. And they turned the results, the grand juries turned the results over to Congress, and the House Judiciary Committee penned a articles of impeachment, and it passed in committee, and then Nixon resigned. So, you know, we're not talking games here. We're talking the real thing. And we go on this historical precedent of what really happened. So, you know, this time I want to talk a little bit more about Donald. I've gotten to know him. I met him at the National Libertarian Convention in May in Vegas, and just kind of know this guy. He's you know, elderly man, a sweetheart of a guy. He was in before he retired. He was in the he was at Wall Street doing, you know, investment work. He totally loves the Constitution, and I think we've had him on the show before. Well, we've had him on the show before, but he is not. He's not afraid of moving forward with this, making stuff happen. So, Donald, why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
I will, Kelly. I'll be happy to. I think probably if you think of me, you can think of what Newt Gingrich famously said, get a job, get a better job, own the job. And that was basically what I did over a period of about 20 years. I got a job with an investment bank in Memphis, Tennessee. I joined a firm that split off from the original job and became a member of its board of directors and a manager, partner in the firm. And then they sent me to New York to open an office for them and for the firm in New York. And at a certain point of time, I left that firm and formed my own. And it was primarily we were investment bankers that were involved with public finance. And by the way, at the same time, at a certain stage, we also opened an office that, I should say not an office, but a subsidiary of the corporation that did what you know as pass-through securities or securities that gain their value from the underlying security of the mortgages that are involved in the pools. And these were the first Ginnie Mae's, and then Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae took it over, what you heard so much about recently. Nothing very mysterious about any of this. It's just that people just don't understand quite how they work. And they are kind of weird, but they're not that weird, and they're not that hard to understand. What I want to point out to you, however, is that when Washington gets involved in things, they often demonize them, and as they have with mortgage-backed pass-throughs. And, you know, it's just like they don't understand it, so they go ahead and just demonize it and to hell with it. And at a certain point, everybody on Wall Street that was involved in this split these out into a separate company. And the reason they did that was because they were such a weird piece of paper that they would foul up your financial reporting. And so we put them into what we call GSIs, Government Securities, Inc. We just moved all those transactions with government-backed securities into a separate corporation. I want to point this out to you because mostly think people don't understand how Wall Street works. And Wall Street is so simple. It's just almost idiocy. I mean, Wall Street just brings buyers and sellers of money together. Now, let me say that again. Wall Street brings buyers and sellers of money together. There are people out there that have money to invest, and there are people out there that have companies that need additional funding, or in this case, governments like the local, you know, municipalities and states. And they're looking for investors, and Wall Street brings the two together. And it's, you know, it's a very straightforward and simple transaction, and somehow been made mysterious. And I don't understand why. I guess because the seems to me that the Democrat Party wants to split us up and demonize one area over another. You know, right now what we're doing is we're saying we're going to tax the rich. Well, hell, everybody in the United States is rich. So, I mean, that doesn't make any sense at all. And what they're trying to do is make us distrust each other. Okay, we need to be all on the same team going the same direction. And we are, as Americans, as a general rule. But our politicians like to play off this idea that there's one group or one bad group and one good group, and, you know, good guys and bad guys. And, you know, you can't have heroes unless you have dragons. And so some group has to be the dragon and some group has to be the hero. And that's what happens to us so much in our political scene.
Now, wow. So that's kind of what your observations of the federal government meddling with the stock market based on certain prejudices and biases and the dragon, whatever, that kind of got you into the Libertarian Party and studying the Constitution, and just that kind of got you going for many, many years. And then, we met back in May at the Libertarian National Convention. And, you bought one of my books. I sold over 100 books. I had to reserve a few. I pretty much sold out. But I saw you as somebody who was quite knowledgeable, mature, would take action. I was glad to sell it to you. And then we met Roger Roots there, too, at the National Convention. And by the way, this is a little plug for the Libertarians. They love the Constitution. And in talking with people about the grand jury, they got it. They were excited. Quite a number of them knew about jury nullification. That's the Pettit jury. But anyway, so that's where Donald and I met. And then you called me, and then you got a hold of me, and we started talking. You were kind of pestering me, if you will. You kind of pestering me about this kill list and what can we do.
The kill list to me. Well, you know, I saw the administration doing terrible things with the situation of gun running, and Fast and Furious is just to me just an outrage. Because I saw that as the administration trying to reduce our right to own guns as individuals. And then they came up with this idea of a kill list. It was shocking to me because this thing is like, well, there's a thing out there, though, that says if you want to hide something, paint it red. And the administration painted this kill list idea red. They got a 6,000-word article put in the New York Times right at the end of May of this year. And, you know, It's a frightening article, because not only has this man ordered assassinations, at least three of which were U.S. citizens, he has assassinated someplace between 1,500 and 2,600 individuals, and he is, according to this New York Times article, every Tuesday morning that he is in town, he has a committee meeting of his people who want to recommend to him who they assassinate that week, and he okays the assassinations personally. And, you know, I picked up an article from Judge Napolitano that just said, in absolute fact, there's nothing in the Constitution or nothing in U.S. statute law that allows for the assassination of people without due process. I mean, if you're going to have someone tried and convicted and executed in the United States, the executive branch brings the allegation, it goes to the judiciary, it goes to a trial, it goes to, if you're requesting it, a jury trial, and after a group of your peers determine your guilt or innocence, then you may be sentenced under certain very, very strenuous restrictions to being executed. But you just don't go out and kill people. I mean, that's just not acceptable. I mean, there are, of course, countries where it is, where you've got dictators, but the fact of the matter is we're supposed to be different. We have a constitution, and we're supposed to be law-abiding people. We're not supposed to be out there murdering each other, and that's what this amounts to.
Well, yeah, let me add a little bit more about the kill list, if you will. Scott Shane and Joe Becker broke this story kind of in the mainstream, if you will, being New York Times reporters, on May 29th. And since then, there's been others. There's been the Washington Post, Newsweek has talked about it. I saw a clip on YouTube where, I mean, it's getting the public's attention. It's getting out there. And Obama went on Jay Leno, and Jay Leno slightly pressured him about it. And so Obama responded that, well, Anwar al-Awlaki was bad, bad, bad. He was second to Osama bin Laden, so we had to take him out. He was an American, okay? And so was his son, Mobarjar. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce his name. It would do dishonor if I even tried, but I'll just call him al-Awlaki Jr., all right? So we had, and then the third American, his name was Samer Khan, and when cornered, Gibbs was the White House press secretary.
Yes.
Gibbs avoided the question. WeareChange.org got a video of Gibbs getting cornered on this question. And well, what about a 16-year-old? And that was Milwaukee Jr. What about 16-year-old Milwaukee? And he avoided the question. Finally said, well, you know, the real problem was a father that didn't discipline his son, and he had a lot to blame with the father. He didn't deny he was killed by a drone in Yemen. And what happened was young al-Awlaki had went, he left home to search for his father, and he ended up, you know, in the Middle East and then eventually over in Yemen. And in the process, young al-Awlaki had made some friends, and they were having lunch by a roadside ditch one day, and drone plane took him out.
Now, someone, real quick, Kelly, I was speaking with somebody today about this, and I don't know if there's some misconceptions of what really went on, but on the part of some folks, that speaking to this gentleman today, he was under the impression that the people who were killed by the drones were, you know, were there in Yemen to join up with the terrorists. You guys have anything to clarify on that point?
Well, here's what I want to clarify. I want to go over the big picture just right away. I want to put this thing, I want to hammer this whole terrorist. Okay, we do not have a declared war with Iraq, okay? We need a I'm not mad at you, Robert. I'm just mad, okay? All right. We do not have a constitutionally declared war by Congress for Iraq. What are we doing over there? Okay, do we have a consciously declared war upon the war on terror? No, we don't. Well, they decided that, okay, we'll use the kill list, but it'll only be in certain zones of defense, you know, like around Iraq. Okay, that zone didn't extend into Yemen. Okay, so we got unconstitutional war. We have a precise area to use it. It was used outside this area. How many ways past Tuesday do I have to explain this is wrong? He was an American citizen. He was 16 years old. And Milwaukee Sr., their family is saying, look, he was not a terrorist. They kept quiet for quite some time. They said, no, he's not. I mean, where in the Constitution does he have the authority to do this? I'm just really kind of mad. Because here's the bottom line. If you're free, I'm free. If you're living in a state of security, so am I. And this is probably all in the back of everybody's mind, so I'm just going to get it out there, okay? We know drone planes, that there's contracts that start flying all over our own country, okay? We already have local law enforcement and sheriff. Why do we need these? Anyway, in the back of our minds, we're going to begin to wonder, is Obama going to use this on American citizens on our soil? I just thought I'd get it out there. That's the concern.
Well, I think, let me say to you, I think the concern is greater than that. What I would suggest to you is that going around and killing people is not a good idea when you're just killing people randomly like this. And here's the real problem. Not only are we asking our young pilots to do something that may very well at some point in time be declared acts of criminal acts, okay, war crimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, and they are war crimes. There's an article that I pulled out of the newspaper down here, and it's titled, A Job Waiting for a Kill Shot a World Away. And it goes into great detail about why we're having to give psychological help to these young F-16 pilots who are sitting in some remote area of the world, and they are being told to watch a particular family. And they sit there. You know, these damn drones have got huge, huge tanks as far as duration is concerned, and they sit there for days, watching this family day in and day out go about their going to the market, doing their normal type family things, and then all of a sudden one day, and they try to say, well, you know, we try not to kill them all. We try to just take out the adult male, and it's but they're not always able to do that. And they'll go ahead and they'll just consider it, quote, collateral damage to kill the whole family. Now, it's one thing to be an F-16 pilot and sit up there 5 miles above the earth and release a laser-guided bomb and never even know where the hell it hit. It's a whole different world to sit and watch a family doing their normal course of their lives and then a week or 2 weeks into that be told, kill them. Now, you know, it's a whole different world. It's a whole different thing of you know, how do you live with yourself? Because, you know, we just had a terrible shooting in Connecticut, but at the same time, we're asking our fighter pilots to do the same type of thing that we're talking about as a great tragedy in our own country, but and just do it routinely. The numbers, gentlemen, are between 1,500 and 2,600 people, according to the New York Times, that this man has ordered to have assassinated. Now, you know, that's a lot of people. And as some friend of mine just told me today, where do you draw the line? You know, a friend of mine said to me, one of my big contributors said to me, you know, Don, the whole thing amongst the Jewish community, of which he's a member, is we didn't complain when the gypsies were taken away. We didn't complain when the Christians were taken away. And nobody complained when we were taken away. I mean, you got to draw the line someplace, gentlemen, and you got to draw it hard. It's not a question of, you know, this is not something that could be excused under any set of circumstances that I can see. All right, look, we are obviously with.
Excuse me, Mr. Soto. I'm hearing. I don't know if the volume's low or something with the mic or the phone or what have you is on, but you sound kind of muffled. Are you getting that too, Kelly?
Let me move it.
Yeah.
How's that? Is this better?
Yeah, it's some better.
Some better or a lot better?
Yeah, I'd say some better. What do you say, Kelly? You hear me? A little better, yeah. It's a little better. Okay.
All right. I just turned the volume up a little bit. Is this any better now?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's better.
Yeah.
Okay. Correct me when I have
thank
a problem
you.
Like that. Correct me when I have a problem like that.
Sure. Thank you.
So you're saying that these soldiers who were operating the drone planes, the drones, that they have to go to psychological treatment because they're having trouble. Probably trouble living with themselves, but that's what you're saying.
Exactly. I'm not telling you anything. All I'm telling you is about an article I read out of the this came out of the newspaper down here, the Miami Herald, and the date on it is Tuesday, July 31st, 2012, and the name of the article is "A Job Waiting for a Kill Shot a World Away." It goes into great detail about the fact that these young men are being told to basically sit on top of and watch a family go through its normal daily routine, and then at a certain point in time they will be required to kill them. And that puts a whole different light on it over what is normal for a pilot for our Air Force. I puts a whole different world of stress on me just looking at it. The author of this article is a woman named Elizabeth Bum Miller, U-M-I-L-L-E-R. Oh, and by the way, she's a New York Times, writer. This was just picked up by the newspaper down here.
That's your Exhibit 3 on your complaint, and I actually have the link to that article on the website in 4th Branch, 9V. 9V and 9W talk about the complaint, the kill list, and your exhibits are on 9W, too. So you can find those links and actually read those stories. Two of the exhibits were from the New York Times, and the third was Judge Napolitano on his comments, and he was going off, oh, my gosh, his article, Napolitano just hammered him. And we know his perspective, it's the Constitution. So, you know, we have this documented. I mean, that's the whole point of talking about the kill list. And we kind of got to move on because we got a lot to cover. But obviously, Donald was very upset about this scenario, so he went into action. So why don't you go ahead, Donald, and just tell us kind of your next steps.
Well, the next step for you, Kelly, you and I worked together on putting this thing together. And we wrote it up, and as you point out, we put three exhibits to ask to justify the questions that we asked the grand jury to investigate. I mean, we put together a petition of grievance against the United States government, not against the president, but against the government itself, because there are a lot of people named in the long New York Times article as being members of the committee, and so we, you know, it's kind of like the investigation that was done into the Watergate. You know, they didn't really go at the president himself because the grand jury really cannot do that. The grand jury can go, however, after the people around the president who are involved in these, if they are felony events, because they are. Well, you know, as far as I can tell, there's no way to get away with murder in the United States unless there's some extenuating circumstance, and this does not constitute any extenuating circumstance as far as Judge Napolitano is concerned. I mean, you know, we're supposed to be, as I say, a nation of laws, not of men, and so this thing is just completely it's un-American. That's where you stop right there. Now, the other thing is, too, go ahead.
Well, yeah, your complaint, he basically drafted it on his own. He read my book and drafted his own. I had some other thoughts, but it was his complaint, so he did a really good job, and he alluded to, you know, these facts and asked questions. The way the complaint was written was quite brilliant, Donald, just that you asked a number of questions that once in the hands of the grand jury, they're going to be asking these questions themselves. So I thought it was real good. You put it together, and it was only 2 pages.
Yeah.
You know, well, two pages plus 24, really, but your first 2 pages described, you know, here's the problem, and then here's the information with three attachments. You call them exhibits. It totaled out to be 24 pages, but it was just 2 pages. I mean, how more simple can a person make it?
Well, it's a simple proposition. I mean, what we're asking you to do, asking the grand jury to do, is evaluate the situation, see if a crime has been committed here, and if so, indict the people doing it, and let's get it stopped, because that's really the whole name of the game. We're not trying to. This is not a political game. This is a whole different world. This is a game of keeping our government in line, and as you very well know, the grand jury is our last resort against tyranny. And it is set up in a way, your book does such a great job in explaining exactly what the grand jury's duties and obligations are and how we communicate with it. And, you know, the complaint is mine. I followed your book as far as the value of the grand jury and how it should be communicated with. And just, you know, we just coordinated this thing and had it happen. And I think that it's wonderful because, you know, the grand jury is supposed to be our protection against false allegations by people in government who are, for one reason or another, either power crazy or vindictive toward another person or whatever. But the best of all possible worlds for you, if you are accused of a crime, is to go before the grand jury yourself and convince the grand jury that you are not guilty of any crime, because if a grand jury refuses to indict, it never happened. The whole thing, you're not any, there's no such thing as a record of your having been accused even. So the whole idea of grand juries is to protect the citizen against false allegation and, of course, also bring justice to us as a nation, because if there is wrongdoing, we need to ferret it out and get it stopped. And that's all. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward and simple idea. And as you point out in your book, it goes all the way back to the Magna Carta. And so it's like we're on very good, solid ground here. As U.S. citizens, we have an obligation to, in my opinion, we have an obligation to be certain that our citizens are not taken for granted, and they're certainly not allowed to be railroaded off, if you will, for crimes that they did not do. At the same time, we need our government not to commit crimes itself. In this case, I believe that there's a crime being committed, and I think that Napolitano is the one that brought that out to me in very precise terms. The man's well educated in law, and well educated, in my opinion, in the Constitution. And so that's why we use his, what I consider to be legal opinion, as to the inappropriate actions by our government in this particular case.
Yeah, well, he wrote, yeah, he had a brilliant article on that. Yeah, you know, the grand jury, all right, this, Justice William O. Douglas, this great institution of the past, this is what he wrote, this is in U.S. versus Dionisio, I mean, 1972 case. This great institution of the past has long ceased to be the guardians of the people for which purpose it was intended at Runnymede. And he meant what he wrote. And the shield function that you just talked about, you got to go through a grand jury. If you can't get an indictment, prosecution ends. And that way you have your neighbors standing between you and the government deciding your fate. We take that neighbor system out, you get Nazi Germany, where they didn't have trial by jury. Communist Mao, Stalin, they got rid of the trial by jury. In each country, within 20 years, 20 million people were murdered. So when your neighbors stand between you and the government, you are protected. And so the grand jury also has a unique feature of turning around and going after willful misconduct in office by public officers. That's the Missouri Constitution, Article 1, Section 16, in the words of the present Supreme Court Justice of the state of Arizona, Rebecca White Birch. I just want to bring out a little quickie. I'm holding in my hot little hand here. A grand jury indictment from New York. It was the county of Rensselaer, if I pronounced it right.
Rensselaer, yes.
Yeah. A year ago this month, Clement Campana was indicted for basically forging absentee ballots. Him and a group of people, several of them. There was eight of them indicted. Four of them pled guilty, took the lesser sentence. But Clement Campana is his name. He was the mayor of Troy, Democrat. He was involved in tampering with absentee ballots. The grand jury says, sorry, you're going to jail. We're indicting you. But that is the historical power. James Redwick Manship, he lives in Virginia. He was watching the corruption of a judge in Winchester, the city of Winchester. He submitted a complaint to the grand jury there in the late morning. This is back in January. Late morning, he submitted a complaint about the corrupt judge. That afternoon, the judge wrote a resignation letter. Early retirement. Yes, I'm going to retire early. Really, no. You needed a fresh change of underwear when you found out the grand jury was going to investigate you, buddy. So that's our power. That's I went into it before in the talk, so we got to move forward here. So, okay, Donald, so you went ahead and wrote the complaint. We kind of looked at it, helped you out a little bit, and then we had a conference call with Roger Roots, which I hope he's had the time to chime in with us. But he's an attorney, and he knows this power. I met him also at the National Libertarian Convention. We talked for about 2 hours. He knows full well. Years ago, he wrote in law school, if it's not a runaway grand jury, it's not a real grand jury. It made it into the Clayton Law Review. But he was advising us, basically, that, they're not going to submit it to the grand jury. You can go ahead and submit it, but they're not going to submit it to the grand jury. So we kind of had an expectation in our mind that, what happened when we got the letter from the Department of Justice denying this request to submit it, we kind of knew this was going to happen. But, Donald, your complaint was written on August 16th, and then you experienced what I call the department shuffle. You went to the federal courthouse in the Southern District of Florida. And tell us what happened, Donald, when you first walked in the door with the complaint and just the whole process.
Well, the whole process actually started with a call that I made to the federal court. And the first contact I got with the federal court was a very pleasant young man. He was an assistant U.S. attorney, actually. And he actually encouraged me to go ahead and write a complaint. Now, he didn't tell me. He was not very specific on the court procedure, if you will, the rules, the local rules on how to file the complaint or do anything like that. But he did encourage me, and he got me to thinking that this is a real thing that can be done, although he seemed unfamiliar with Title 18, Section 3332, so I went ahead and got with, matter of fact, probably got with you, but anyway, got some clarification on exactly what our statute was, read the statute, wrote the complaint, and we went down. I took a friend of mine with me because, as you and I discussed, we felt like it probably I needed at least one witness to be with me at all times. And I took a friend of mine who was also a libertarian, and we went to the courthouse. Now, there's a big, beautiful courthouse in Fort Lauderdale, and it's right on Broward Boulevard, right downtown across from the big public library, and it's just a gorgeous building. Now, they've secured it off now because of 9/11, so that, you know, it's just like you might as well, you know, they consider you the enemy when you come to the glass door. And, but we got inside and we talked to I guess just a guard, and he said, well, now you can't do that here. The grand jury actually meets in another building, and he gave us the address of the other building. And we got to it. I think it was a little bit late or something, so we didn't get there in the first day. We came back the next day and we got into it. We had the room number from the previous day, and we asked to go to that room number. We were sent to the floor. And there was a guard there, and he said, well, you can't go there. I think we had actually passed in the hall in front of that room number, but the door was closed, and we were not going to go barging into it. As a matter of fact, I found out later. But the fact is that we were going in looking for the clerk that would be able to take in a piece of paper and give us a stamped receipt for it, that would tell us that something had been delivered to the grand jury, and ask that person, whether male or female, to give it to the foreman of the grand jury. And the complaint, as you know, Kelly, is addressed to the foreman of the grand jury. It's not addressed to the United States attorney. It's not addressed to anybody else. It's addressed to the person who is the sitting foreman on this grand jury. Now, I had talked, in fact, I think in your book perhaps you had said, any federal district that has more than a population of 4 million has a constant sitting grand jury. I mean,
it's a special federal grand jury that works on RICO cases. Oh, that's right. You get a bunch of men in a room deciding who to kill. That would be a RICO, yeah. So anyway, this is their speciality, okay? So, yeah, Well, let me explain 18 U.S.C. 3332 a little bit.
Okay.
It basically says, and it's on the website, hiddenforthbranch.com, that when a federal attorney receives a complaint, he is required by this federal statute to inform the grand jury of the complaint received. There you go, statutory mandatory action. You must inform, at least inform, okay? But, of course, the Department of Justice didn't even do that. But, because you had mentioned to me that you experienced the department shuffle here, there, back and forth, and finally it was the security guard that helped you?
I was a security guard that helped us. We were up to in one of the upper floors of the building, and this young, we told the man what we wanted to do. He reached over and pulled out a file and took out a form and handed it to me. And the form was just a one-page form. And the form gave three procedures for filing a complaint. One was by email. One was a telephone number to call. And one was a postal address to send a complaint to. Okay, so the first thing I did, obviously, or maybe not so obviously, but I called the number. And the number goes automatically and immediately to a voice a messaging type of system, because there's no way in the world. Well, you know, let me just not digress there, but it just goes to voicemail, and it says, you know, leave your name and number, and we'll get back to you. Well, I figured, you know, maybe not, but I left my name and number, and believe it or not, about a week later, I get this call from this nice young female that just left a message on my machine, you know, call her back. So we played telephone tag for a couple of weeks, and finally I got her on the phone, and I told her what I wanted to do, and she said, well, now, we don't take in complaints from people. They come through various agencies. And now I have to remind myself that young man, the first young man that I talked to, had told me perhaps I should be talking to an FBI agent. If I have an idea that a crime is being committed, I should be talking to the FBI. Well, you know, I didn't think much of that because this here, I just didn't do it, okay? Let me just stop there. I just didn't do that. We went ahead and we went with the idea that we're going to go directly to the foreman of the grand jury because it appears that that should be open to a U.S. citizen. Now, the young female that I talked to said she'd never heard of it before, but she would take a look, and I gave her the citing and the law, and she was very polite. We exchanged phone number. No, she couldn't give me a phone number because all I have is a first name. But she said, now, I'm the only person in the office that gets complaints, so just put the complaint in with my name on it, Judy or whatever, and I'll certainly get it because I'm the only person here that gets complaints. Good, that's fine. So I addressed the thing on the email to her. She gave me an email.
Let's take a step back a second here, Donald, okay?
Sure.
Because you did have some email correspondence with her, and you sent me a copy, which was a link, and there was a link. If you have a complaint, we have a nice complaint form. I saw it. You can submit it to this department. Oh, gee. They give a whole list of executive office departments, and I'll say that again, executive office departments. And I remember from the list, there was the Security Exchange Commission, there was the EPA, there was the IRS, there was a list of about 15 offices. The thing I noticed the most, these were all executive branch offices. Now, who has ultimate control of the executive branch? That would be UBUBU. Wait a minute. Our whole complaint is against the executive branch, and you're giving us all sorts of resources in the executive branch? Wait a minute. The foster guard's the hen house, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If the fox, the best way for the fox to avoid investigation is to block all complaints against his own buddies. This is what reeked of a lack of accountability system. There is no accountability when the people that you're bringing charges against have the right to block the complaint. And it's like, what? I was livid when I saw that. And I have to take a further step back just for myself because other experience I've had with other people filing complaints, they go to a DA or a prosecutor or a special investigator under the DA's office, and they're just dumbfounded. They're like, oh, I didn't know a grand jury could investigate on hearsay. They know squat. They don't know anything about the grand juries, and it's not a normal procedure for them, so they're not operating maliciously necessarily. They're not operating with the intent to block. They just don't know. So I'm kind of giving them the benefit of the doubt here. And so we have to educate the people who have to get the complaints of the grand jury.
Well, I think you're absolutely right.
Go ahead.
I think you're absolutely right. And as a matter of fact, I didn't get any feeling of of anything sinister about any of this. There's a procedure, and what this young woman said was, well, what she basically said was, which we all know, the idea that that the prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich. And what they're seeing as that the prosecutor is a guy that's bringing the allegations and bringing the complaints and bringing the people accusing people of wrongdoing, and the prosecutor is who they normally see as the person who brings a complaint to the grand jury. And I'm sure that most grand juries may never see a citizen's complaint because we are, as a society, not even aware this exists. Kelly, service you have rendered with your book is outstanding because nobody knows they can do this. Absolutely no one does. If you're not in AUSA, you just don't know it.
I need to get into this a little more a little bit later about a right of petition that it was historically intended to go to the grand jury and not the executive department. So I need to get into that. So we talked with Roger Roots a couple times in a conference call. This befuddling, the courthouse doesn't know what to do with this, doesn't know how or where. I've seen this in a case in Arizona recently where the lady was robbed of her kids, if you will. Exculpatory evidence was excluded, and she went to a grand jury regarding this ruling of a judge, and the clerks at the courthouse are like, well, we don't know what to do. I haven't seen this before. Huh? What? Yes, it's all right to petition for redress of grievance. It's not a present practice of prosecutors. It's not it benefit of the doubt is where I'm going. They don't know. Or option number two, they are intentionally blocking it. But anyway,
I don't have the impression that they're intentionally blocking it. Okay, what I think is that they would as soon retain the power, and they are retaining the power to themselves. But I don't think necessarily it's because of anything other than ignorance. As a matter of fact, you and I have already discussed our next step here. Before we file a lawsuit, we're going to give the man an opportunity to correct his error. But the fact is that an error has been made here, and we're going to correct it. Now, the only question is how are we going to correct it, and when will it get corrected? Because the problem that I have in dealing with the court system as a whole is that it moves with the speed of a glacier, and so you can spend years, and it's done that way, in my opinion, to prevent us from going and shooting each other or something. I mean, if you get into the court system, it's like molasses, and it's just like, you're swimming and swimming and swimming, and you get nowhere. And eventually what happens is you either run out of money or you run out of patience and you quit. And either way, they win because there's no blood in the street, and the issue has gone away. So there's a certain poetic justice, I guess, maybe in the idea of having a legal system and having a legal system that does not allow for quick determinations of right and wrong. It's all shades of gray as far as they're concerned. But regardless of that, we're going to get this done because it's such a serious, serious issue. I mean,
yes.
The idea the next thing that happened after I got in touch with this young woman and she was very kind and we got the thing we filed, and then I said to myself, matter of fact, I even probably said it to you, well, grand juries operate in secret. They do not go out splashing names of people who have been brought in to them, because until an indictment is issued, and while the investigation is going on, you would not want your name, if you were being investigated, to be flashed around. Because after all, in our society, allegation is tantamount to conviction. And it's not supposed to be that way, but it really is. And so if the grand jury is, quote, looking at you, he's probably guilty. And so we understand that. And I really didn't think we'd ever hear anything back from them until an investigation was started and subpoenas were issued, and that would have leaked to the press. Okay.
Well, that's what we were hoping for. Right. But
sure.
Just, just to add to your point, the reason why there's confidentiality with the grand jury is when they are investigating willful misconduct in office by public officers, when they're investigating the executive branch, they need to be protected. Grand jury needs to be protected so that the executive branch or some schmuck can't go intervene and try to play games with them. You know, retaliation.
Right.
If you indict me, you know, I'm going to kill you, whatever. Retaliation and threat. So the shroud of confidentiality is an asset here. The only problem is that shroud has been used as an excuse to block American citizens from getting complaints to the grand jury. It's frustrating. There's William Windsor of Lawless America, he knows this great power, and he has tried several techniques to get in front of the grand jury. He found out, called the courthouse during lunch hour, and some clerk answered, "Where's the grand jury meeting? What time?" "Oh, it's downstairs in this room at this time." So he's standing in front of this room. The grand jury is walking in. He has them a complaint. Well, the court responded. This is a perversion of the confidentiality clause. The court responded with him by having a restraining order that he cannot be within 500 feet of the courthouse. It's like, now this is a perversion, because we need to get complaints to our friends and neighbors who can say to the government, "You're out of line here." So, you know, the confidentiality thing. So the way it is now, we just have to go with what it is. You have to go through an attorney, except California, I don't want to go into that. But you have to go through the attorney. You got to find the right attorney, which Donald's story is longer than this, but the department shuffle. He finally found out, submitted to this lady who will get it to somebody, who will get it to the grand jury. He did that, and then we got this letter back. And this letter back was quite mind-blowing.
Well, the letter back is just dismissing, but the encouraging thing to me is that we now have a document in hand.
Well, real quick, you mentioned the letter. Can we elaborate a little bit on the contents of that letter?
Do you want to read it, Donald? First few sentences?
I don't think I've got a copy. Well, maybe I did. Hang on a second.
Well, yeah, I got a copy, too.
I don't want to refer to a letter and then not to what the contents was, because I don't want to leave that open ended.
Oh no. Well, it's also on the website.
We're
the letter is on the website.
We can read it here also on the show. You know, for people to know what the content of the letter was.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, let's just read it. Okay. I got it in my hot little pan here. I mean, carrying around my pocket. All right. Okay, upper heading, there's this nice Department of Justice symbol. Oh, really nice. It's on the right side. U.S. Department of Justice, United States Attorney, Southern District of Florida, address Miami, Florida. All right. November 19th, 2012. Donald Sheldon, P.O. Box, blah, blah, blah. All right, regarding complaint. Dear Mr. Sheldon, this letter acknowledges receipt of your correspondence. Unfortunately, our office does not mediate individual complaints. Then they go into, you know, we can't give you legal advice, and go seek the state attorney general or call the state bar and get an attorney for you. And they signed it, "Very truly yours, Wilfredo A. Ferrer, United States Attorney, Citizens Complaint Department." That's it. Two sentences. I'll read these two sentences again. This letter acknowledges receipt of your correspondence. Unfortunately, our office does not mediate individual complaints. All right, let's go backwards. This came from the Citizens Complaint Department. Obviously, Donald succeeded in the department shuffle, and he got to the right people who got it to the right people. Citizens Complaint Department. Mr. Federer. Yes, you may pronounce the word Fuhrer in interpretation. All right, Fuhrer. All right, United States Attorney. Okay, this is a big, big step if you're an attorney to become a United States Attorney. But he also signed it, "Very truly yours." Donald, do you know what that means in legal language?
Kelly,
what an attorney
I'm not certain that you need to repeat that, because I think that's bullshit. But anyway, let me just say to you that I think that the girl down here whose initials are on this is the complaint department, probably is that young woman that I told you I talked to that said she was the only person that had received complaints. And I suspect that she probably was told to, give me this response. All right, by the way, I am delighted to get the response, okay? I think that the response gives us all sorts of credibility as far as now not having them acknowledge the presence of a complaint to them. And I think that's very, very, very important. And it moves us forward in a manner that I am delighted with. I was I really had assumed that we would be like, would just be like dropping a drop into an ocean. You would never hear anything further. You would have to just continue to revise the complaint and rescind it and revise it and rescind it until finally you either, you know, give up or you find out that, from the New York Times, that there is an investigation going on into the da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know. And so I'm delighted that they have now acknowledged that we have that I have complained, and I think that's a wonderful thing for us. I told you, I talked to an attorney down here today that said, well, you're obviously going to have to file a lawsuit. And he was not only unwilling to do it, he was unwilling to even make a recommendation of somebody who might do it, because what he said was anybody who sues the U.S. attorney was going to be blackballed from the legal profession forever. So you're going to have somebody that basically is on their way out the door, i.e. retiring, or you're going to have somebody with just enormous courage. And so, you know, that's where we're at with that. And I think that the suggestions that you and I have come up with here is to, what we need to do with this this attorney general, not attorney general, this U.S. attorney down here, is write him a letter and ask him to please submit the complaint to the grand jury and tell him why he has to do that, because it is his obligation under Section 18.3332. And give him the absolute quote of the law and let the thing sit. And I think that, you know, who knows? He might actually change his mind. I think that most of them were not willing to go against statute law. And that begins to put them in positions. My observation about bureaucrats is they're going to take the course of least resistance. And the course of least resistance for him may very well prove to be cooperating with us. You know, he may just figure that, well, as it goes up the line, it'll be delayed and delayed. And 5 years from now, these guys will either be dead or quit. And the bureaucracy is such that it just will move with the speed of a glacier. And that's, you know, that's just where it is. And but I'm prepared to be glacier-like. I mean, I don't have any problem with that. We'll continue to just push at it and push at it and push at it, because I really do think that this is an overreach of power that is absolutely unacceptable. We cannot accept this as a, from our executive branch. And it just doesn't work. You know, it just does not work.
Well, I like that you're willing to write him a letter, and I've been working on it since August. Write him a letter saying, look, petition for redress of grievance goes back to a right of petition, just the word petition. A right of petition has been affirmed by the Supreme Court over and over. So writing him a letter saying, look, get this in the hands of the grand jury. Here's the cases for petition. Here's the historical intent. And, you know, reconsider it. And we give him, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 days, whatever. If he doesn't respond, that's the time to pull the trigger on a lawsuit.
Exactly.
It's best to have his cooperation, because if, you know, let's suppose that he's a closet Obama opposer. I didn't want to say hate, but just suppose he's a closet Obama opposer and he realizes he has this power. He will help us, actually, by working with the grand jury and doing some investigative work and yada, yada, yada. If he is an ally, we don't want to alienate him right now. So a letter saying, here's the case law, here's the history, you have this power, please do it. And he might feel empowered and actually do it.
Absolutely.
So,
I agree.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly our next step. And not only do I think it's our next step, I think it is an appropriate way for us to be handling this. You know, this is not an emotional type situation. This is just plain law. And we're just, you know, you just keep pushing and keep pushing and keep pushing, and you just never give up. You know, it's like, you know, we see this in politics all the time. You know, one group decides that they're going to push hard on an issue, and they just never give up on it. They keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And generally, the quote that I give quote to the credit to Margaret Mead, that says, a small group of people can change the world. Indeed, that's the only thing that ever has. And so, you know, a small, dedicated group of people can change the world. And so we're going to be that small, dedicated group, and we're going to change the world. And you're, I'm going to, I want to talk again about your book for a minute, Kelly, before you interrupt me here. The book is out of sight, okay? This is the most powerful book I think I have ever read about the practicality of the workings of a government bureaucracy that is in place for us. This grand jury is just wonderful.
Now, I was hearing some background noise in there, so I don't know where that's coming from, but I just want to address it so that perhaps there's something could be done about that. But go ahead, Kelly.
Okay. Well, yeah, I wanted to discuss what happens in August from our conversation with Roger Roots, the attorney. He predicted that the Justice Department would block it. He predicted this. And so that set our expectations so that we weren't all, you know, upset in a tailspin. And so when we got this letter, we actually were to the point where we were excited. We actually got an acknowledgement. So that was really good. Excuse me. I want to discuss a little bit about our right of petition for redress of grievance, because it is core to our position. The position is citizens can submit a complaint to a grand jury, asking the grand jury to investigate willful misconduct in office by public officers. Okay. Of course, we have the, you know, the First Amendment, all right? But that only acknowledged the right that was already in existence for at least 500 years before Magna Carta. But I want to talk about, I'm going to read the First Amendment, then I'm going to go through some court cases that are very powerful. And I keep finding more stuff the more I get into it. In fact, the Supreme Court has ruled that the right of petition is an absolute. So here we go. Here's the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion, prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or the press, or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. It's the last sentence, or sub-sentence. Basically, it says, so Congress shall make no law abridging the right of petition to the government for a redress of grievance. It's right there. You make no law. You can't restrict this. So I'm going to go a little bit further here, okay? We're starting with 2011. There was a case, I won't go into the details, but it's called the Bureau of Duryea, Pennsylvania, versus Charles Garneria. Hope I pronounced it right. Justice Kennedy delivered the opinion of the court. And this is what he said about petition for redress of grievance. The right to petition allows citizens to express their ideas, hopes, and concerns to their government. He goes on to say, petition conveys the special concerns of its author to the government and, in its usual form, requests action by the government to address those concerns. Of course, in this scenario with Donald, we're going to the fourth branch of government, the grand jury. Okay, and we go on to some other quotes. This is, you know, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, Roberts, present day guy. Okay, the petition clause undoubtedly does have force and application in the context of a personal grievous address to the government. I'm being redundant here, but these are Kennedy's words. Petition is of ancient significance in the English law and the Anglo-American legal tradition. The Supreme Court goes back into history. They actually do. I was surprised. I've seen some other court cases. All right. Roberts wrote, the right to petition traces its origin to Magna Carta. Okay, so some people say, oh, you know, you talk to modern day attorneys, oh, you're talking to Magna Carta, you're a conspiracy nut. Well, then so is Justice Kennedy. I don't care. They go back to it as well. All right, so he says Magna Carta. Okay, fine. Justice Scalia, in the same court case, gave his opinion. You know, you can think of a petition. Is it a petition to the legislature? Is it a petition to a court in the form of a lawsuit? Is it a petition to a grand jury? Is it a petition to the executive department? Well, of course, we know that you can write your congressman. Nobody's ever stopped that. We know you can file a lawsuit. Nobody will ever stop that. Grand jury? We're going to get there. All right. Oh, regarding a petition, we're going to strike out one of these. Is a petition to a court in the form of a lawsuit, is that actually deemed a petition for redress of grievance? Justice Scalia wrote, the court has never actually held that a lawsuit is a constitutional protected petition. Nor does today's opinion hold that. I find that position, that a lawsuit is a constitutionally protected petition, quite doubtful. And Justice Thomas, he said the same thing. The reason set forth by Justice Scalia, I seriously doubt that lawsuits are petitions within the original meaning of the petition clause of the First Amendment. Like, oh my gosh, okay, so that leaves petition to the executive branch, the legislature, or the grand jury. Now we're going to get to Justice Scalia's words. And by the way, legally, some attorneys have said that what Einstein was to physics, Jefferson was to politics, Scalia is to law. He is brilliant. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Scalia. All right. This is what he wrote. The reference to the right of the people indicates that the petition clause was intended to codify a pre-existing individual right, which means that we must look into the historical practice to determine its scope. Oh, look at the historical practice. Let's look at something here. Wait a minute. The court already did this. Justice William O. Douglas, again my hero, 1966 case, Adderley versus Florida. Under certiorari, you know what certiorari is? Immediately, we need a ruling from the Supreme Court. Certiorari means now. We interrupt everything to hear this case. Certiorari is huge in the legal world. And they took up this case in certiorari, Adderley versus Florida. And Justice William O. Douglas talked about the right of petition and its historical origin, which Scalia suggested recently. We should look at its historical use and practice. Okay, here we go. The historical antecedents, this is again William O. Douglas's words, the historical antecedents of the right to petition for the redress of grievances run deep and strike to the heart of the democratic philosophy. C-61, that's like a section, like a paragraph, C-61 of the Magna Carta provided that if we or our justiciar or our bailiffs or any of our servants shall have done wrong in any way toward anyone or shall have transgressed any of the articles of peace or security, and they also have been sworn to four barons of the aforesaid 25 barons, let those four barons come to us and to our justiciar if we are out of the kingdom, blah, blah, blah. And let them ask that we cause that transgression to be corrected without delay. And he talks about the petition goes to C-61, the 25 barons is where the grand jury came from. William Douglas talked about the great protector of the people was the grand jury at Runnymede, which indicates what? The signing of the Magna Carta, the very location in England. A citizen can go right to the baron group and investigate. But it also says in continuing on in C-61 that if the perpetrator does not correct the problem within 40 days, the 25 baron group of the grand jury can then oppress the perpetrator in every way possible. That was the historical practice, and now we've turned it into the word indictment. He also goes on to write, okay, and this is regarding presenting positions, in case of grievance, that no court whatsoever hath power to judge or censor any petition presented. First Amendment shall make no law abridging the right to petition. The Bill of Rights, 1689, provided that it is the right of the subjects to petition the king in all commitments, and prosecutions for such petitions are illegal. He goes on further, the Declaration resolves that the First Continental Congress, adopted October 1774, declared the Americans have a right peacefully to assemble, consider the grievance, and petition the king, and that all prosecutions, prohibitory proclamations, and commitments for the same are illegal. Again, my hero, William L. Douglas. He's basically saying you can't block a petition. And so this federal treaty...
Yeah, it looks like it's been done.
Yes, and we're hoping it's out of ignorance.
Well, I don't think it's out of ignorance. Let me interrupt you here a bit, Kelly. I have, because of your talk here and your calling attention to the letter from the United States Department of Justice, looked at the letter in much greater detail. Now, the letter contains two or three things that I want to just say to you, make it possible for me to communicate back with this young clerk that I think is the actual sender of this letter. I have an email address that I can use to contact this complaint department. And I have also in this letterhead a phone number that I can use to contact this complaint department. And I also have the initials in highlighted letters of the person who actually sent this complaint recognition letter to me. So I'm going to tomorrow have the telephone conversation, I hope and expect, with the person, the actual clerk that sent this letter out. And I will be better prepared to respond in writing. I don't know what that noise is, but Kelly, I think it's on your end. And let me say that I will be able to correspond directly to the person who wrote this letter to us and to me. And I think I'm going to be so bold as to say this letter, while it's under the signature, unsigned signature of the United States Attorney, it was written on his behalf by the Citizens Complaint Department. Now, the idea here is I think by this time tomorrow night I'll have a lot more information about where this came from and how we managed to get an acknowledgement of our complaint. I think a bureaucrat is doing us a hell of a favor here.
Okay, yes. Hopefully that alleviated some of the background noise. Go ahead, Kelly.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, Donald, you know, I love your attitude because you want to work with people instead of work against them whenever possible and be ready to fight and go against them when you have to. I think the best approach is a follow-up conversation with the lady who wrote it and hopefully a follow-up appointment with the attorney, and hopefully they're operating out of ignorance. And if they're operating out of ignorance in the things we've put together, you can inform them, and then they might actually, instead of just lamely submitting it, they might actually jump on it and submit it because they might be a closet Obama opposer. So that's the best approach.
Look, you know, I don't think you have to even be in a closet. Let me say this to you. I still have a good deal of confidence in the government of the United States, and I don't have any real feeling that there's any sinister attitude toward the citizenry. As I told you all before,
excuse me,
I think that
Mr. Sheldon, your volume's gone down again. So I just wanted to let you know that.
Let me see if I can get you up closer. Is that better?
Yeah, that's some better. Thank you.
Okay. Anyway, I am not the background noise, okay? Let me say this to you. I'm not the background noise. You know, I understand what the background noise is because I've had too many conversations where they occur. Anyway, regardless of that, and I will get closer to the mic and stay that way.
Thank you.
The idea here is to win this and get the government to stop killing people, and I think we can do that. And I believe that this petition will indeed have the desired effect, and I'm not going to buy into the idea, Kelly, that the government's going to naturally want to just try to prevent this. I think that we need to go at it with the idea that our government is indeed ours, and it will respond to our complaint in an appropriate manner. And I don't think that the government. There's a statement out there that anyone can change the direction of government if they are just be patient and persistent, because government has no will of its own. Government is a bunch of people who are basically getting their paycheck, and they ain't no axe to grind, and they're not out there to do anything except get their paycheck. And so if you are a person with a strong will, and I've forgotten, I'm trying to remember exactly the quote, but it's a quote by a very famous philosopher, that any persistent individual can bend any government to his will. And I believe that to be the case. I do not think that their government has any will of its own. It just doesn't, because it's too multi. If there's too many of them, I mean, you just have to understand that if you are willing to put, Kelly, we got a man in the White House that has no more business being there than the man in the moon, and he is there only. He's there only because of affirmative action. There is no other reason why he got elected. He has never done one thing in his life. Nothing. Zero.
Well, now he's been reelected because at least in my opinion, if for one, is because Republicans put up probably the very worst candidate possible to go up against Obama. There were so many reasons why Romney was the worst choice to go up against him. I mean, they might as well just handed up Obama another 4 years, putting Romney up there. But I digress, and that could be a topic of discussion for another show, but go ahead.
Well, I want to talk about persistence for a little bit. One of the greatest movies I've ever seen is Amazing Grace. It's the story of William Wilberforce, who he helped, he suggested we ought to sue for peace with the American colonials because we can't afford this war anymore. But William Wilberforce, he was a parliamentarian, and he ended the slave trade in England. You know how we had a civil war with the whole thing, or so they say. But anyway, he went 12 years. And why was the government so entrenched in slavery? Well, of course, they were an island nation, and they needed ships and slave labor, and it became, because of the slave labor, the horrifying, horrifying moral choices they made. But they made Great Britain a world power. This tiny island ruled most of the world. And so the merchants and those who were making a ton of money, who could get their parliamentarians elected, kept having power over this idea of ending the slave trade. He came up with a very, very simple, unique idea that ended the slave trade. It is so inspiring. But it took him like 12 years. And everybody laughed at him. However, he ended the slave trade, and he was buried in Westminster Abbey, which is a very rare honor in the British system. And so he is a great, highly honored man, proved the idea of incredible persistence. And that's what we have to continue to do. And I'm so glad to keep working with Donald, because he's doing it. So we know, okay, let's go ahead and try to win him over through gentle persuasion, through overcoming their ignorance, which I've seen, by the way, in so many attorneys, when I ask them about the grand jury, they haven't a clue. And those aren't my words. Roger Root said most attorneys don't have a clue about the grand jury and this power. Anyway, so we help them overcome the ignorance. If that doesn't work, then we have to take them to court. And now I kind of want to go into our bigger picture, because it's really important. Okay? There is a bigger picture. If we still have to sue, which we'll know in about a month or so, we are going to have this complaint regarding the kill list available for people to download and submit in their federal districts. Why are we doing this? As we flood congressmen with letters, so can we flood grand juries with complaints. And I really believe this. and based on the historical and all the research and yada yada, I, the more I look into this, the more rock solid it is. It's a very strange discovery. Anyway, so we're going to have the website available. You'll have a complaint. You can download it, edit, submit. We did this with electronic election fraud in the primaries. We had over 500 complaints downloaded. We have a system that everyday people can just go ahead and download it, change it for their specific circumstances, and submit it. And what we're going to do, if we have to sue, on attachment A, we're going to attach attachment A. Attachment A is the federal lawsuit stamped filed.
Mm-hmm.
In the first sentence of the complaint, we're going to say, U.S. attorney, you might want to see attachment A if you're going to choose not to submit this complaint. Please submit this complaint in its entirety. See attachment A. I'm being redundant, but the lawsuit will point out all I just read, and even more, that we have the citizenry has the right to hold our government accountable to the grand jury. If we're in the 1800s, this would be a no-brainer. Even up to 1946, this would be a no-brainer. But the ignorance perpetrated upon the American people has happened. And even to the point where the courts, as a practice, well, we don't normally get complaints about to grand juries, except California, but that's another story. Anyway, we are going on something bigger than just the kill list. We are trying to bring to the American people this great system of accountability. And one of my passions of this is so that we don't end up in a bloodshed mess. We got states talking about secession. We got, what is it, over a million signatures now, whatever. We've got militia groups from Arizona to North Carolina, number at least 400. Michigan and Wisconsin have a bunch up there, too. Look, some people are prepping for bloodshed. If we can avoid this by going to grand juries where everyday people investigate willful misconduct in office by public officers, if we have a situation where we can hold our government to account, then we will get back to the great America, which was, oh, that's right, the grand jury helped America become what it is by holding government accountable. It is a bigger picture involved, but I want people to be involved. I want people to go to the website, Hidden Fourth Branch, look at 9V and 9W, and you can see quite a bit of what we talk about tonight. We have a way to peacefully resolve the problems. We just didn't know we had this power.
We know it now. But thanks to you. And I think that I want to say once again, you know, really thanks to you, because your book is outstanding, and it's just, you know, it is a instruction book on exactly how to exert your right as a U.S. citizen and take advantage of what is available to you under our Constitution and under our law. And I think that it's just an amazing thing. And, you know, I think that, and as I say, I don't want to read anything too optimistic into this. I'll have a lot better handle on it by this time tomorrow night, but I'm going to go back in and I'm going to talk to, I believe I can talk to the clerk again, and I believe that, you know, I believe we're going to be able to get this thing into the hands of the grand jury. Now, the question really becomes, in my mind, one of, at what point do we want to bring in the press? Because, you know, we can, there's no reason as a citizen why we cannot tell other people that we're filing these things. In fact, we already are. Your initial response and you're putting the letter out on the internet, I think is absolutely brilliant, absolutely out of sight. Now, you know, I've got at least one reporter that was the internet publication called The Examiner who I'm sure will write this up. And, you know, at some point we need to get it into the New York Times. Because as I have, from personal experience, know that anything that gets written up in the New York Times immediately gets the attention of anyone involved. I mean, you're talking about something that will make a judge take an early retirement. All you got to do is have some small thing hit the New York Times, and if he is vulnerable at all. Now, federal district court judges, of course, are basically invulnerable unless they absolutely commit a felony. But they're just impervious to anything. But I'll tell you right now, virtually every politician and virtually everyone else runs from the New York Times. And so you know, we get this thing so that with the Times picks it up and starts talking about the kill list being – that their write-up on the kill list is semi-sympathetic to the current administration. Now, it's not totally so, but it's semi-sympathetic. I do not at all think that number three exhibit that we put in is at all sympathetic to the idea of having these young pilots sit around and eventually execute whole families. I just don't think that's at all sympathetic. But the long article is, and so you know we've gotten some significant pressure on this administration from some of the things that they've done in here, and we need to keep it up. But yeah, you know, I think that this is the way to do it. And I think that we'll absolutely stop the idea that any president, now or in the future, can with impunity have assassinations ordered. I think it'll come back and bite them hard, and that's what we're looking for. We want something that will stop the idea of any man in the United States being able to have assassinations at his will and executed at his will. That's just unacceptable behavior.
And of course, you know, any man or woman, with, you know, and in the future, this country sees a woman president. Well, I think it will at some point, at least in my lifetime. So let's put that in there as well. But speaking of you know, Kelly's book, two things. One, of course, you could go to www.thehiddenfourthbranch.com to see about his book and the website. And also, if you'd like to hear more about his book, there is a interview that we've done with Kelly and his book, and you can find that interview in the archives here on Bard's Logic Political Talk, where he does discuss his book. So go ahead and check that out. And two, I see it's only about 29 minutes left here of the live portion of the show. And so for the people who have just come in or recently have come in, I'd like to direct you to the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, in which you can find the link there in two ways, either one. Of course, go there directly, www.bardslogicpoliticaltalk.com, or you can also go there through Blog Talk Radio by going to the homepage here and clicking on the link. If you go to the Get Involved page, then you will find a red button that says Save an Elephant on there, and you can sponsor for only $50 a year, and I think it would make a great Christmas present. A baby elephant whose parents were killed by poaching over there in Africa, and of course that is for the ivory that is in their tusks, which has become a status symbol for many Chinese, in which a lot of the money is actually going towards weapons that are killing a lot of innocent people, including children over there in some of the tribal and the brush wars over in Africa. So go ahead and check that out on the Get Involved page of Bard's Logic Political Talk. So we have about 28 minutes of said live, about 23 before I do things to start shutting down for the live portion. We may or may not go into an extended portion tonight. But if you'd like to chime in on anything that you heard tonight, I do see there's some folks on the switchboard here in the call. So if you'd like to chime in, just push the number one button on your phone dial. If not, that's fine if you just like to listen in, but that's what you can do to chime in. Or if you're not already on the line, call in at area code 347-945-7428. And so, Kelly, if you'd like to get back to it, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I wanted to address one thing. Donald mentioned that federal judges are kind of immune. Not quite. In my book, I discussed that nine judges, federal judges, have been held to account by indictment. Several of those have been by grand juries. So, and a grand jury holds this power. Federal judge, you're out of line. We're indicting you. It's in the book. It's referenced. Anyway, I wanted to go through some possible outcomes of this, okay? And I'm asking, all right? I'm asking my liberty-loving friends who want to see accountability, just kind of learn about this a little bit more from the website. Of course, the book, see, here's one thing I wanted to point out about the book. It has an empowerment section in there. One-third of the book is empowerment. It's called Fictional Future News Stories. And I've seen this trend over and over when people have read the book, and they want to get into action. They get a hole in whatever, and it's knee-jerk reaction. They get into action. Donald, just one example, David Kellyanne is Silvio Porcaro, you know, and of course, there's some that might be concerned about these, you know, FEMA camps and whatever, yada, yada, yada. If we learn the grand jury and we do this, we may not have this fear that they are concerned about. Anyway, so a lot to be said about the empowerment in the book itself that I didn't put into the website. All right. Now, here's some possible outcomes, all right? Let's suppose this gets into the hands of the grand jury, which we think it will. Either one way, through voluntarily, through the numbers game of people flooding grand juries with complaints all over the country. One way or the other, okay? There's going to be results from this. They're going to issue subpoenas. The press has leaked the people who are in the kill list meetings. They get a subpoena, all right, regarding, you know, they show up, the grand jury is going to, if I was in the grand jury, I'd ask them like 50 questions, you know, like, what are you doing trying to kill people, all right? Anyway, after these the henchmen, I'm just calling them the henchmen, after the henchmen get in front of a grand jury, as soon as they go out, they're going to need a fresh change of underwear. They may have thought that they were above reproach. No, they're not above reproach. That's a statement of character. No, they are not above investigation. They're not above accountability. So one result of this from one subpoena is that the henchmen under Obama are going to be like, I'm not sure I want to do this anymore. Because they're going to talk amongst each other that one of them got a subpoena. And so Obama turns around one day and says, hey, you know, there's two more guys. I want you to go kill them. No, we're not going to do that. Why? Well, Dave over here, he got a subpoena for a grand jury. He doesn't want to go. You know why these men are not going to want to go to jail? Because they don't want to drop the soap. In the Watergate situation, all right, the men pretty much spilled the beans. It took some time, but they spilled the beans. Why? Because they don't want to go to jail because they're not answering questions. They don't want to be put in a position where they got to be careful if they drop the soap. I mean, they're going to spill the beans. So, anyway, so that's one result. Okay, I'm going to go through. I'm going to get to a pipe dream here. But one result is the men under Obama, they're just going to stop it. And a bigger effect is they're going to realize, oh, we're not as powerful as we think. So we're going to start pushing back in the government. Oh, that's right. The French did this in the 1800s with their grand juries. They had to rewrite laws because they couldn't enforce them. Anyway, the next level is one of these jokers, one of these henchmen, actually gets indicted, thrown in the slammer. Conspiracy to commit murder, traitor in federal code, you did it. You're going to jail. Sorry. The next level is many multiple henchmen get indictments. And the next level is Eric Holder resigns. Because he's been arguing his wacky arguments, unbelievable wacky arguments for kill list. So, you know, Eric Holder resigns. Another level, I know people are going to call in and ask, well, can we use this for the birth certificate? Yes, I've already contacted Sheriff Arpaio's office. Some attorney probably said, well, the grand jury can't do that. It's probably because that attorney's in ignorance. I'm getting tired of having to educate attorneys. Anyway, I mean, they're good guys. They're just, you know, ignorance perpetrated upon them as well. I didn't know about this. I studied case law. I studied the Constitution. I studied code, standards, blah, blah, blah. I didn't even know about this power existed. Anyway, all right, so we keep going up the level. Obama might resign. Nixon resigned. Let's see. Eric Holder might get indicted. We have all sorts of possibilities that could happen. Well, it could still happen that this thing gets so ugly because so many grand juries are on, it's just like Watergate and Nixon, that not only Obama resigns, but also Joe Biden resigns. The Constitution has a
command. Wouldn't that make Boehner the president, though, if that was to happen? I mean, maybe if there's a way we could get Boehner to resign, too, possibly.
Well, you're going there. You're going where I'm going. This is my pipe dream. You know, I'm just straight up with you. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but it's a pipe dream. I'd love to see it happen. Obama is so investigated. By the way, he's got Fast and Furious. He's got Benghazi. He's got yada, yada, yada. Okay. Oh, by the way, Senator Chuck Grassley wants to take the Fast and Furious to a grand jury, so I'm not the only one. He's, you know, I kind of like him. He's actually an attorney But he wanted to take fast juries to a grand jury. Great, good idea. All right. So such a mess all around Obama. He resigns. Biden, he resigns. Guess what? Speaker of the House. Well, presently, of course, Bonner is the Speaker of the House. But he's up for re-election in January. Newsflash, courtesy of Rex Christie. Newsflash, Bachman will challenge Bonner for GOP leadership. First, the plus Tea Party darlings say that when the new Congress begins in January, she will challenge Speaker John Bonner for the leadership of the House Republicans. What does this mean in this pipe dream? Obama, Biden gone. Michelle Bachman could be our president.
Interesting.
Isn't this interesting?
Well, yeah, I tell you what. Yeah, I'd like to see. Yeah, I'd like to see Boehner out of there. That'd be for certain. And you mentioned Chris Christie. I certainly wouldn't want to see him in there. But I thought you said Chris Christie. I'm like, wait a minute. That sound right?
Or not?
But
Rex Christie brought this. This is like hot news that Michelle Bachman is going to challenge Bonner for the Speaker of the House.
I thought you mentioned Chris Christie. I'm like, wait a minute, that didn't sound right. I'm sorry.
Rex Christie, good guy.
Okay.
Rex Christie, good. Chris Christie, Rex, good. Anyway, all right. I'm going to take some calls if you have or any other thoughts from Donald right now.
I don't think I've got any more thoughts.
Yeah, go ahead, Donald.
I do believe we'll get. I do believe we'll force Obama to resign, and I'm not sure what happens after that. But the fact of the matter is that the man has overstepped his power dramatically, and I think he's, I watched a George Clooney movie last night that was really wonderful because he was playing a part of being a sitting governor wanting to be the president of the United States, and it's a real power play. And he made the statement. One of the people that was working with him made the statement to the prospective president. Yeah, well, you can get away with running the country into bankruptcy. You can even get away with jumping in there and starting wars. But just don't screw with the AIDS. Just don't get involved with the young females. And you know, that was the only thing that he said would get you in real trouble in the United States. Pretty damn close to true. This man has indeed run us almost into bankruptcy, and he has, of course, started wars just with on a whim. And, of course, he also has, as we are arguing now, done something that's completely improper with this the idea of determining who he's going to have assassinated. I think that's just an outrage just so great that we almost just have to hold our noses to think about it. But anyway, let me say we're down probably to about less than 20 minutes. I think that it's been a real pleasure being on this call, and I want to thank you, Bart, for letting me go on the call. I really appreciate it. And I want to, again, congratulate Kelly on his wonderful book. It's the best education anybody can possibly get on the use of grand jury and how we can better help the country get into a more stable condition and a better government by exercising the power that we have. And, power unexercised is power lost. If we don't use this, we lose it. And so we're using it. It's a wonderful idea, and congratulations, Kelly, on bringing it to our attention.
Well, I really appreciate that, Donald.
Well, yeah, so go ahead, Donald.
I appreciate you, both of you. Yeah, it's really great.
Thank you very much for coming on to the show. It's I definitely would like to get some updates as they come in, for – anything on this, the grand jury complaint or anything of that nature, or if anything else goes through, of course. And there's definitely a lot of information to absorb, as you put out, you both pointed out that the power of the grand jury and what it can all do and affect is not widely known. So a lot of folks, would have to, learn more about it, possibly by checking out Kelly's book or Kelly's website in order to get more information. And, next time we have other shows, you can call in and chime in more about it once, all that information sinks in and they can get a response. Because, as I said, it's been an hour and 45 minutes, chock full of information. As I said, we only have about 10 minutes left anyway before I'll be shutting getting to the shutdown part of the show. Thank you very much. And definitely to get some updates.
Let me throw something out to people, okay? I want to throw this out. I watched All the President's Men, and then I rented it, and I watched it again, and I watched it again. It was so amazing because it's like, oh, my gosh, this is the impact two individuals can have. Woodward and Bernstein of the Washington Post. I mean, they were persistent, and they literally, they kind of risked their lives. Obviously, Donald and I are in that kind of position because, long story. Anyway, but that movie is so inspiring as far as what a couple of individuals working together can do. However, grab a pen and paper when you watch the movie. Notice the number of times that Woodward and Bernstein mentioned the grand jury. Because the grand jury was the ones doing it. But the grand jury didn't do this, and the grand jury didn't do that. And so if you watch that movie, you'll get empowered, but you'll also see the little hidden subtleties that, I think that Woodward and Bernstein actually did help the president resign because of what was getting out through their paper. When the public opinion was realized, oh gosh, not only is the House and the Senate Democrat and I'm toast, it's Nixon, the public is finding out rather quickly too. So, but yeah, they mentioned the grand jury over and over in the movie. And so I'm not talking out of my swear word. this has happened, folks. So I always encourage people, Netflix, it's probably on YouTube now. Yeah, just All the President's Men. It's a great story. But I'm going to shut up so we can field some calls.
I want to get in a little pitch for the Libertarian Party of Broward County if I can, Bart. We've got a website, lpbroward.org, that will have posted on it on an ongoing basis our progress.
Oh, did we lose this call, Kelly?
I'm still here.
I guess.
Yeah, it sounds like we. Is both Kelly, Donald, you're both here?
I'm here. He'll probably call right back.
No, I still see him on the. I still see him on the line.
Hey, Don, if you can hear us, maybe check your phone for a mute button.
So maybe you think they cut off or battery died or something of that nature. Perhaps you can call in. I remember one time when I had Randy Stufflebean from the Constitutional Party, the National Vice Chairman of the Constitutional Party. He got disconnected. We ended up doing a three-way call using my phone, which I was glad to see that actually works. That was a little bit of an experimentation on that part. So, but we'll see if he's able to make it back in here. No, it sounds like I hear something clicking, but hopefully he can call back in because, as I said, I only see. I only see a few minutes left here. Well, not a few, but. Do you hear that, Kelly? It sounds like, oh, no, we just lost it. You there, Kelly, still, or?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, it looks like that the call got dropped, so I was hoping maybe some folks would have been able to ask him some questions directly, but as I said, I'll be shutting things out and down in about 5 minutes. So I know you mentioned before we had a short conversation tonight that there might be some other future topic. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, looks like we got it back in. Donald, your mic is back live, but before we do that, I was going to have Kelly mention some of the things that we might be looking to work on in future shows. We talked briefly about it tonight, Kelly, so do you have anything you'd like to bring up today, or do you want to hold off on that?
Kelly, I'm back in.
Oh, let's let Donald talk.
Go ahead, Donald.
What I wanted to get across there is that we've got a website. It's called LP for Libertarian Party. LP Broward, B-R-O-W-A-R-D, .org, and we'll be keeping that website updated with any progress we make in this area or anything we hear back. It'll have some other things in it as well, but the fact is that this will be one of the major things in it. We also have a Libertarian Party of Broward Facebook page. So if you want to come up on Facebook and just come in and join us, and we'll keep posting things of this type and keep you up to date if you're interested in what's going on with the Libertarian Party, at least at the county level and at the state level. I'm on the executive committee for Florida, and so there will be information about what the Libertarian Party is doing. But this particular issue will certainly be kept in the forefront until we get what we are after, which is to stop the killing. And that's our goal. And that's the number one issue for us at this point. Once again, let me say thank you for allowing me to be on here. And, Kelly, a pleasure always working with you, and I'll be looking forward to doing some more things with you.
Well, yeah, I always enjoy working with you and talking with you, Donald.
Great. And hopefully next time, you know, when we cover this topic, we will have Mr. Roots in here to, you know, give his part and his take on the complaint and the other things concerning, you know, probably, you know, the kill list, things probably such as he probably could chime in about the NDAA and topics such as that.
Good.
Yeah.
Well,
okay, great. Go ahead, Donald.
Bud, thank you again. I'm going to just go ahead and I think drop off of here. I really do appreciate it, and it's been a wonderful pleasure. A real pleasure to be on your show.
Okay, thank you very much. It was a pleasure to have you, and we look forward to your updates.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Good night. Take care.
Good night.
Also, I was reading in the chat. I'd like to apologize to Mr. Rex. He said about confusing him with Krispy Kreme. I guess my hearing might need to be checked out. Well, not really, but you know. I did not mean to assault Rex or Mr. Christie for there was no comparison whatsoever between Rex and Mr. Krispy Kreme, Chris Christie. And speaking of Rex, you can hear Rex as well as Tex on the Tex and Rex show, which you can hear on Sunday evenings from 10 p.m. till midnight. And that is Eastern Time, and that is another political show, conservative theme show. And so check that out here on Blog Talk Radio. And once again, that is the Tex and Rex show from 10 p.m. till midnight, and that is Eastern Time, and that is on Sunday evenings. So I see I only got a couple minutes before I go ahead and shut up the show. So if there's any closing thoughts, Kelly, that you'd like to leave us with, or perhaps things that you're going to be working on in the future, let's take the next couple minutes to do so, and then I'll shut things down. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, we have this right, okay? Under Petition for Redress of Grievance, C-61 of the Magna Carta is what Justice William L. Douglas referred to as, this is where our origin is, for Petition for Redress of Grievance. Well, it's very clear that in that same section, clear who the complaint was to go to, it was the grand jury. It's right there. So anyway, I have been asked to be on a video that's going to go to Congress, or at least a committee of Congress, William Windsor Lawless America. Yeah, William Windsor Lawless America. I've been working on it. I did one take. It's too long. I'm going to do another one. Anyway, I'm going to ask Congress and the state legislatures to pass a law. Two laws, at least. One, Anybody who brought the complaint to a grand jury has committed a felony. Yes, anyone, i.e. judge, DA, doesn't matter. Number two, anyone who willfully misleads a grand jury has committed a felony. From experience, from my own complaints, from others, getting emails and calls from all over the country, this is what we're seeing. You know, in Missouri, yeah. That the power of the grand jury to investigate willful misconduct and office by public officers and to bring an indictment in connection therewith shall never be suspended. Yeah, okay, the power of the grand jury to investigate government, issue an indictment, shall not be suspended. But that's if they get the complaint. If they don't get the complaint, I'm just tapping my fingers. I don't know what to do. This is, you know, writing a book is one thing. That was a year ago. It came out a little over a year ago. And getting in touch with other people that know this power, the people that try this, this is the games that are played. The bottom line is corruption and the powers that be are scared. They are very scared of the power of the grand jury. They're scared of it. So they've had to perpetrate ignorance. They've had to play games. They've had to block complaints. They've had to get people to mislead the grand jury of their power. I mean, I got a letter from my own county grand jury. Oh, we don't have jurisdiction. Oh, really? Here's the state codes. You have the jurisdiction, point, 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 point. This is just the own, our own California penal code. And, of course, I went into case law after that. I just, the powers that be in corruption, are they're afraid of this power. They are very afraid of this power. And I just hope I can empower, that's my goal, empower, just like Donald tonight, just like David Cowan, just like Asubio, just like so many others. I hope to empower the American people to learn about this power and submit complaints. And this is better than bloodshed.
Indeed it is. And with that, I'm going to get ready to shut out the show. And for this evening, thank you very much, Kelly, and also thank you very much for bringing Donald Sheldon on. And Wednesday night, folks are familiar with the show Bones. It's a TV show. And I have to be honest, I don't know quite what station it is, but I know it's been on for a number of seasons, at least like five seasons or something of that nature. But however, the reason why I bring that show up is on Wednesday, we are slotted to have Julia Newman, who is the composer to the music. And we're going to have her on Wednesday, and I'm going to give her give you guys a sample of her music. But however, I see someone just called in to chime in about tonight's topic, and it might be someone we were looking for. Let's find out. I will open up the line briefly. 443, your line is open. We've got just a couple minutes. So what's on your mind?
I think my name is Dwayne Davis. I'm out of Baltimore, Maryland. I caught some of your chat, and it was about the grand jury and approaching the grand jury. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Dwayne.
I was arrested here in Baltimore, Maryland, and in Lake County, Illinois, for exposing corruption in a judicial system. I named dirty cops, judges, and lawyers. And when I did that, I was arrested and labeled a terrorist. I won my trial. I won my case. I had to fire my lawyer and defend myself. But since I was going against, the state's attorney and the different judges that I had claimed to be corrupt, I had nothing in my favor except the law and my ability to defend myself. Now here in Baltimore, Maryland, and you could check the records, I won the case. It was a terrorist activity. They had me for a toilet bomber. They said a toilet bomber. That was real crazy. Long story short, they took my computer, my video camera, my truck, 7 months worth of film when I was documenting the politicians here, Governor O'Malley, Kathleen Pugh, the mayor, the chief of police. I was videotaping them like a video vigilante, similar to some of the stuff that y'all was talking about, stuff I was doing as an independent. I'm a caterer. I work for 85% of the richest people in this state. And I used my catering abilities to get into these houses and document the things that was going on. I worked for Judge, previous Judge Bell, Judge Holland, Governor O'Malley, George Patarakis, Peter Angelos, the Baltimore Ravens. And the knowledge that I got about the things that they do where the government is working to protect the corporations and enslave the people. The prison industry here in America has legalized slavery, and they enslave the underclass in America, black, white, Hispanic. And they do it to the people that have no social ties and family. It's a system of justice in which the Department of Justice knows, Patrick Fitzgerald knows out of Chicago, Lisa Madigan knows out of Chicago, Governor Blagojevich knew, the Attorney General knows. All this stuff that I'm telling you, as far-fetched as it may seem, all you have to do is go to Senator Grassley's office and get my file and my report, because I filed papers with the Department of Justice. I filed papers with Senator Grassley's office to have a judicial oversight of this. The same thing that y'all are doing, I've been trying to do since 1986.
Wow.
And they've been trying, and I even got records where I have filed papers where they tried to kill me, empty guns on me, and they refused to take the charges. Okay? You can Google Dwayne G. Davis, everything will show up like you won't even believe it. And I'm glad that y'all out here doing what you're doing, because we need a voice. Because mainstream media is hiding this to the hilt.
Well, wow. We are in a recording session now, which means that the show is no longer live. But we're hearing now will be on the archives of the show. And I do see someone just called in, just barely made it in towards the recorded session. So if you'd like to chime in, just push the 1 on your the phone dial if you'd like to chime in. And if you just like to listen, that's fine as well. So if there's anything else, sir, you'd like to tell us how you'd like to proceed?
Well, the way that I'm proceeding is I went to Alan Locks, the Attorney General of the Civil Rights Division here in Baltimore for the Department of Justice, and I filed a complaint with Alan Locke. I also went to the U.S. District Court on December the 5th, 2012, and I filed a writ of mandamus against Governor O'Malley, State's Attorney Schellenberger, State's Attorney Bernstein, and the Baltimore County Chief of Police. On February the 2nd, I filed I filed an application for witness protection program with the state's attorney. And I went through the city solicitor's office to try to file that. I filed it on February the 2nd. On February the 7th, they locked me up after I filed a witness protection application. I even went to the Internal Affairs Division of the Police Department here in Baltimore City and filed the papers. Now, all the papers that I filed with all these people that I'm naming you, all the paperwork is gone, is missing, with the public officials here in Baltimore City. But Congressman Cummings got it, Judge Ruppersberger got it, Mikulski got it, and the Department of Justice got it. Mr. Kapelhoff of the Civil Rights Division in Washington, D.C. got it, and Carl Snowden of the Maryland Attorney General's Office here got it. So I got papers here that they can't destroy because they're documented. And I'm trying to get a federal postal inspector to get involved so they can hold these people accountable, so they can send them to jail. We need to start sending these officials to jail to show them how it is when the lawless break the law. They need to be subjected to the same laws in which they administer to us. You can't promote democracy in foreign countries and deny the same democracy that I fought for. I'm an honorably discharged veteran. I fought for these rights, and I don't enjoy the rights that I fought for, and that's not what I'm going to accept. It's not acceptable. So I want to thank you for giving me a chance to voice this out and to put this on law so they can go check this out. Other people can go find this information and check it out and see that I'm not lying, and then hold these officials accountable. You need to send these officials to jail and let them experience the prison industry that they created, period.
Well, that's really powerful. Wow, that's definitely real powerful. If I may ask, did you see the link on one of the social networks for the show, or did you come in through just searching through Blog Talk Radio? Or?
No, I got a friend named Kelly Mordicia.
Okay.
Mordicia. I can't pronounce
Mordecai?
My name.
Mordecai?
Kelly,
okay.
Yeah,
well,
we've
been friends on Facebook, and I just said
right, we've been
phone
on friends on Facebook for a while, and I've been trying to. I developed my Facebook page because I can't get a million people to pay attention if you go out on the street corners and just say what you got to say on the street corners. But if you get on Facebook, YouTube, and use the social networks, you can contact people with similar situations and link up to form what I call an underground. I got 2,500 people that feel the same way about the issues all over the world, not just in America, but all over the world. And
mm-hmm.
I put this social network together so we can start doing things to accomplish the changes that need to be made.
Well, Dwayne is a perfect example of what happens when you go about trying to expose the corruption. They come after you. They hammer you. They play games. They throw you in jail. They shut you down. They
mess with your family. They threaten your kids. They put guns to your head. It's not a game. They are dead serious about this. The only reason that I'm alive and breathing is because I put this on the social network. And my brother works for the FBI. So if they do something to me, my brother got everything that they do to me. So my brother is my brother's keeper. He can't get involved because of his job. But if anything happened to me, he's got everything I need to take care of what's got to be done. We can't be scared of these people and live on the fear that they put on us, that fear of death. By being a veteran and joining the service, I was a fireman, so death is my playmate. You got to find something else to make me fearful, you know what I'm saying? And I'm not fearful of no man. So I'm going to continue this fight, and I'm going to encourage other people to stand up and stand their ground. You got rights, and you got to stand on your rights. You're entitled to the full extent and the full protections of the law, and I'm not going to accept nothing less, and I'm going to encourage other people to do the same thing. Mordecai is doing a good job. And a lot of things that he's doing, I've been following the best that I could. But the courts are owned and controlled by the corporations, and they're denying us access to those courts. And we got to find a way to hold those people accountable for that. We got to take their money from them because that's their God. So that's the way you attack the system, attack their money. Like Diary of an Economic Hitman. Do the same thing to them.
Wow. Hey, Dwayne, I got to tell you something. This is kind of personal on my end. After we get off this Blog Talk Radio, I'm going to ask God. Hey, God, where can I find people like Dwayne? How can I get connected with him? Because
God
they're great Americans. Yeah.
God gave me to you. For real. If we couldn't do this without faith and without God's blessings or without God's favor, because we've not given up on ourselves, and we, no matter what they've done to us, we still stand up in the face of wrong and righteous indignation. We're not going to cower in this. So, yeah, I'm with you 100%. My dying breath, I'll do this. Martin Luther King died for this, so I can't do nothing no less than what he did.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a Latin phrase that describes what we're doing, Dwayne. It's fiat justitia ruat coelum, which means let justice be done though the heavens fall.
Well, that's where we at.
Yeah, as we continue in our pursuit, we will attract so many other people to the heart of what we're doing. What we're doing is holding our government accountable, stopping tyranny, stopping oppression. Just let us live our lives, be free, and provide for our families. That's all we want.
We want what democracy is supposed to give us. That's it. That's what democracy is supposed to give us. We're supposed to be secure. We're not supposed to be fearful of our government. Our government is supposed to protect us. Not what Eleanor Roosevelt said, never let nobody tell you no unless they got the power to tell you yes. And that's what the court system is supposed to be able to do, tell us yes and no. And they're not doing it.
Wow. Well,
yeah,
Robert,
eye-opening.
Yeah. Well, Robert, we once again run into another patriot who loves his country. You know? It's just, we keep unifying people.
He's,
we keep
trying, he's got thousands of them, you know, who are on his list, you know, or in his group. you know, that you know, feel the same way or, you know, under the same banner.
They locked up a man here in Baltimore City named James MacArthur because he was doing the same thing. What y'all doing with your radio blog, he had a Spectre radio program going on, and he was outing them on the radio, naming them, just like that. And he would, and what he did was like an underground. He set up his radio station in different areas in the city. One day we did it right in front of City Hall, pulled out the board, the keyboards, and ran the battery off of his car, and we did a three-hour show. 2 weeks later, they locked him up. And he's sitting in jail right now with no bond, no bail, no bond on bogus
what,
charges.
What they lock him up for?
They locked him up for he barricaded himself in the house because they had a warrant for him from a case. They had a bogus warrant on a bogus case. So it was a failure to appear warrant. But here in Baltimore, the police are synonymous. You could end up dead at the police's hands. All right, so what he did is had a radio show talking about he wanted to turn himself in, but he wanted to do it so the public knew so he wouldn't get lost in the system or end up dead.
Wow.
They ended up sending a SWAT team to his house. They tore up his house. They did everything. All you got to do is Google it, James MacArthur. Baltimore Sun ran a story about it. It was on TV and everything. Same way that they did me about the toilet. They had me on TV as a terrorist. A terrorist, because I put a toilet in front of the courthouse with a public official's name and picture on it. I called the potty training politicians, and they got mad.
Well, when
they use their power to do this to you.
Yeah. Consistently, what I see is when you expose corruption, they retaliate. They retaliate against you.
Exactly.
They do everything they can to make your life miserable. They destroy your family. You know, I'm very thankful that I have a sheriff and a police chief that they're not going to put up with the crap from the feds. And it's about time for me to approach them and say, look, I'm getting into the crosshairs of feds, so I need your protection. You know, and they will. They will step up for me. This is a rule. I know Baltimore. I've driven through Baltimore. I used to live in Maryland and Laurel. And Baltimore has some problems.
The police here in Baltimore, they go with the politicians. If a politician called Senator Cardin's son, called the police 2 years ago to board his boat and to scare his fiance because he wanted to prove a point to her about his power, he asked her to marry him. You know what I'm saying? And it was he wasted
okay.
taxpayers' money doing this. It's in the news. He used his political power to have a helicopter board his boat out in the Chesapeake for this personal stuff. It was supposedly for an engagement or a wedding thing, but it also sent a message to that woman that he has that type of power with the police. And when police and people, when personal politicians have that relationship with the police, it's dangerous. It's no different than Nazi Germany. It's no different than the Gestapo in Russia or the oppression that's going on in China. Because the police are here to serve and protect the citizens, not to serve and intimidate the people at the government's choice.
It's only going to get worse unless we step up, like Dwayne has. It's only going to get worse. There are things we can do. We can resolve this peacefully. I'm scratching my head. You know, I'll be straight up with you, okay? My heart still has, I'm just this naive Iowa farm boy, okay? My heart still has trouble receiving such evil in the world. I just can't handle it. But I am not going to let them win. I am not going to let my heart suppress the evil I see. I cannot do this because they're dependent upon it. They're dependent upon me going on denial because their evil is so great my heart won't believe it. I'm sorry. I'm done with the denial process. I'm going after them. You know, sure, it might cost me my life. Okay, well, you know, with Christ, I'm ready to face those consequences. But you know what? I got this family. I got this attorney. Okay, she's like a buddy. Designed a little house thing for her in her garage, whatever. And we talk, and she said, "You know what? I mean, she's a sweetheart. Okay, but she said we cannot let bullies run the world. That is, she said that a number of times. We cannot let bullies run the world. And she's right.
They can't. the best. All right, when I was growing up, I'm 5'3" and 140 pounds. I've been the same size since I was 14 years old. I've never let anybody bully me. I don't care how big or how whatever you is. If I win, lose, or draw, we still going to fight. When I joined the Navy, and just like you seen in TV, when the Navy go get to the bars, they go get drunk and they fight. Well, I was the guy that started the fight. The guys on my squad and my team would always say, since you're the smallest and you're the youngest, you go hit the biggest guy and we'll take care of him. And that's how we did bullies. When we was growing up in school, that's what we did to bullies. If you're a bully and I know I can't beat you right out front, I'm going to pick up a brick, a bat, or whatever, and I'm going to bully you. I'm going to make you scared of me. I'm not going to be living in fear. That's not how I was raised.
It is a measure of their evil that they depend upon fear to control us.
Yeah.
Well,
we got to lose that fear.
Well, you know what? Dwayne, you and some of the other Americans have affirmed my faith. I wrote this book in faith that the American people would actually act, that they'd overcome their ignorance and they would act. Once again, my faith is affirmed by you calling in and telling us your story. I believe in the American people. If we're disempowered, we will get into action because the American people are tired of this. We do not want to be oppressed. Our liberties have gone not only into the genetics of our being, it's gone into our soul. And we just have to have enough people standing up so that bullies will not run the world.
You got to. We got to. If we don't, then the movie The Matrix is going to turn into a reality, just like Star Trek turned into reality with the phones and the this and the that. The Matrix is going to turn into a reality, too. If we don't sit here and do something to stop these people from just running over our rights, and letting the corporations just rob us blindly. You want us to work like a dog 16 hours a day and only pay us for 8 hours. You want to pay us $7 for a $12 job. You want to shortchange us on everything and reap these capital gains while you causing blight and disparity in my community.
Yeah. And even if it costs us our lives, we're still doing the right thing, and God is pleased.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be willing to die for something, or you're gonna fall for anything. You're gonna be a sheep, and they just gonna slaughter you anyway. I'm gonna die on my feet, standing as a man. I'm not gonna be grappling under my feet, laid in a fetal position, begging for my life. You know, I don't fear that. And when they know that they don't have that fear over you, what else do they do to you? What else can they do to you when they don't have that power over you?
John Adams was addressing somebody who was willing to comply. You know, there was revolutionary war. You had one third that were Tories; they were favorable towards the king. One third against him, and one third that couldn't make up their mind until there was victories. Well, John Adams was addressing them, those who had bowed down to the King of England. He said, "Let us dismiss you in this discourse, and may the chains of oppression rest lightly upon you, and may our country forget that you were ever our countrymen."
Well, I also see...
I'm your countryman.
Well, I also see someone else in the... And I'm going to probably shut things down in about 12 minutes. Here on the extended portion of the show. But I do see we do have another caller. If you'd like to chime in, just hit the 1 on your phone dial, and I will let you in. So, Kelly, go ahead, and then we'll go from there.
This is what it takes. I had a buddy who I showed him one of my chapters of the book early on. It's a memorandum of the powers be regarding it is power or numbered. He read it and he's like, "Dude, do you want me to paint a bullseye on your chest?" So what do you mean? You published this book, you're a dead man. Oh, and many other people have said, "I was at a Christmas party Saturday night." I finally made it out there because I was researching your writing, blah, blah, blah. All right, finally I made it out there and I whipped out this letter from the Department of Justice. This place said, dude, you're going to end up arrested. And he walks away because he's like, doesn't want anything to do with it because he doesn't want to be arrested. It's like, no. Dude, you got to understand. If we want to be free, we've got to fight. Even if we're putting our lives on the line. Oh, that's right. The Founding Fathers did this. We pledge our lives, our fortune, our sacred honor. You go through the list of what they went through after they signed the Declaration. It's like, oh, my gosh. But they were committed. And we have one of the greatest countries the world has ever seen and the greatest liberties, except it's being encroached upon. But they were willing to die for this. They were saying, look, we're tired of the oppression of King George. We're going to do something about it. And they did. And so, you know, Thomas Jefferson said the tree of liberty must be washed every 25 years by the blood of patriots and tyrants. Luckily, we have other mechanisms that we don't have to go to the blood extent. But you know what? It's worth the fight. And by the way, living life like this is so meaningful, so fulfilling. I would just ask my fellow friends in liberty, continue on. It's worth it. It's worth it.
Dwayne, if you like any words for the end of the show, go ahead, and then I will proceed to shut things down for the evening because, frankly, I haven't had dinner yet, and it's after midnight here.
I really want to thank y'all for. I want to thank y'all for having this program and giving people a chance and an opportunity to voice their opinion and to have other people, you know, with similar perils in their lives to have a platform to get their voices and issues to the people. You're not in this by yourself, and a lot of people think that they're the only ones that are suffering like this. But you got a lot of people that are suffering like this, and as long as they keep us separated, we can't accomplish nothing. But this is a way and an avenue to make that change possible. You can always contact me on Facebook. You can contact me on Twitter, Shortman_9. And everything that I'm telling you is on YouTube. If you go to Shorty's Voice, Google Shorty's Voice, everything that I'm telling you is videoed. I put everything on videos. Some of the stuff that they stole and took and destroyed, I put on YouTube as a backup plan so I can substantiate what I'm talking about. I got recorded phone calls to the FBI. I got recorded phone calls to the police department. And all you got to do is look at them. It's right there for everybody to see. I've been to the Senate, the Congress. I've been to Boehner's door. I've been to these officials' doors, Dick Durbin. Anybody that you can imagine, go directly to Chuck Grassley's office and ask for his aide named Mr. Downing. And Mr. Downing has my file, all right? So there ain't no misunderstandings when I say what I say. I stand behind what I say. That's the true measure of a man. And if I did anything wrong, I ain't scared to go to jail for the right reason. You got to be willing to make them sacrifices to uplift other people, those that can't make the sacrifice. Those that are scared and living in fear will find the solace that they need when they see that you making that stride. They'll stand up and fight with you when they see that you standing up. And that's what you're doing here, and I want to thank you for doing that.
Well, we think, go ahead, Kelly.
That was my closing statement. God bless men like Dwayne. God bless. You know, we're not alone. We are getting together. We are making things happen. God bless this man and many others who are like him.
Thank you.
Thank you both, and also thank you everyone who was calling in tonight or participated in the chat or listened live from either here or the Bard's Logic Political Talk website, or also if you're listening to this now on the archives. Thank you very much, and hope to see you again, and have a good night. Take care, and I will end tonight, as I do every night, with this song by Aubrey Ashburn. Take care.
Thank you.